This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey gang, welcome to episode 335 of Indie Comic Book Noise, another fine, completely independent podcast via the Comic Book Bunker. I'm Steve Raker.
I'm Kevin.
Andrew.
Phil.
And we're usually the Marvel Noise guys, but here we are, gathered talking about indie comics, thanks to Derek Howard and the Deliberate Noise Network and the Comic Book Noise family of podcasts, which we are fortunately a part of.
Yay.
Yeah. You can find us on a Facebook page and leave comments. You could leave us an iTunes review. You can listen to us on Marvel Noise. Bug us on Twitter.
I've been bugging Andrew lately, but he hasn't been responding.
That's because he's been busy trying to get tickets for San Diego Comic-Con.
Apparently. Yeah,
that was an adventure and a half, but success, gentlemen.
Nice.
4 days and preview night.
Beautiful. For so, just you or for you and the missus?
Oh, for me and Lisa. We went All into right. it as a package. Excellent. If one of us couldn't go, the other one wasn't going to go. So,
well, at least that's what you said.
We're pretty close to San Diego, but we go down and get a hotel. Like, if it was a day trip sort of thing, maybe one of us could go, but it's such an involved and the traffic gets backed up and everything. I mean, some people, we did 1 year take the train down, but that was quite a few years ago. I don't know if it's still, as it's gotten more popular, and there's more outside events now that go past the confines of the convention center.
Yeah.
So you'd think, well, they've maxed out. Well, they've maxed out the convention, but the other events continue to take more and more of the city over.
And you want to
it's
wake
like
up there.
It's like living in Comic-Con land.
Right.
Yeah, the whole gas lamp downtown area, you know, a lot of the restaurants do special theming, and there's murals and everything. They do take over, plus some of the movie studios will take over part of a hotel or whatever. It's a pretty impressive.
Wasn't there just like a bus with advertising that would just continue going around the block or something?
I've seen, certainly out here we have I think they call them cigarette trucks that have the thin kind of billboard and they just drive around with different announcements. Yeah. Plus they have the little cabs that the guys pedal around in, which I have never taken. I may be a sad fat man, but I can walk from the hotel to the convention center.
A few years ago at Boston Comic Con, Chris Campbell and Daryl Taylor rented those rickshaw things just to go what we consider to be just a few blocks to the hotel, but seemed too long for them to sully their feet and tire their legs. And we suggested them perhaps wagering next time so that it could be more fun for the spectators.
Well, if you have a few libations, I can see how it would be a greatly viewed aid, but I need every little scrap of exercise I can get, so.
I guess it depends on how many hardcovers you've bought that day.
Yeah, I know that feeling of too many hardcovers.
I went to the second annual L.A. Art Book Fair here in downtown L.A. It was held next to I'd never been to the Geffen Contemporary. It's like a side version of the MoCA here.
Okay.
But it's right next to, it's in Little Tokyo, right next to the Japanese American Museum. And I did go to the Usagi Yojimbo exhibit they had there, which was pretty cool. They had tons and tons of original pages. Because I don't know that Stan sells those. I mean, I'm sure there's a few, but it looked like there were a lot more in the exhibit than possibly could be sold, which I thought was kind of neat. I didn't know if he was one of those guys that started that, keeping your artwork. But it was cool to see it. But this was basically, I don't know, there had to be maybe 100 booths at this thing, and it was jam-packed. But it was mostly kind of really arty zines and stuff like that, and that's not my scene. I was really a fish out of water. I only recognized about 3 comic books that I saw there. One was a Kramer's Ergot they had there. And then there was a Kickstarter. Kickstarter had a booth there. And they had the BDR book from O'Brien. He's a forum member. And so I took a picture and tweeted it to him to show that he had made it to they were using his as one of the examples of the stuff you can get through Kickstarter. there. But I made my way over and found one local comic creator. They had the two guys there. It was Tom Neely was one. And he was most notably, which I forgot at the time, he worked on those Popeye books I loved. Mm. But of course, I spaced that. But what he had there was the Henry and Glenn series. Are you guys familiar with that one?
I'm not.
That's the reimagined Henry Rollins and Glenn Danzig as a couple. But it's done in a sort of traditional newspaper strip style, like Glenn looks like a character out of Little Lulu. And Henry Rollins has sort of more of a, like he'd look like he would fit in the Popeye comic. And they live next to Hall and Oates, who are Satanist occult masters. And they have these kind of wacky adventures, but it's done very much in almost a sitcom sort of old-time newspaper strip, where even though there's, you know, devil worship and Satan, it's done with a sort of lighthearted twist. And what sells it is the kind of romance between the two. They have a nice parody of the Jesus allegory, where he lifts you and carries you in the one set of footprints in the sand, but it's Henry and Glenn. And it's such a sweet book. The original series was Henry and Glenn Forever. And then I didn't realize he'd come out with a second one, Forever and Ever. So I picked up the last issue and read that and enjoyed it. And I was just glad to see another comics person, you know, when you're in some environment, because I thought there'd be more. And I'm like, hey, a comics person. And then there was also Keenan Marshall Keller was there. And I bought a book from him. He did a sample. Now, this is going to sound like I'm cheating, but it's Marvel Comics Presents Rom and Friends. The publisher is Drippy Bone Books. I don't quite know how this is. It's clearly parody, but it features all, you know, Marvel characters, D-Man and Swamp Thing and Adam Warlock, done in your, you know, best alt comic style. So if you're missing some ROM, you can look up Marvel Comics Presents ROM and Friends, but it may not quite be the ROM you remember.
And so this is like when you do those, like, the one guy, I forget, that did the, like, a Kool-Aid Man, like, parody comic, and maybe it's stuff like that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the art is very unique, you know, like, underground style, and there's some, you know, but it's all characters from Marvel, which is weird.
Yeah.
To see, you know, but I don't know. I flirt with the art comic scene. I don't really belong. I can tell I don't fit in, and yeah. I oftentimes don't understand them.
Yeah, I get the same feeling.
So I know I'm on an indie comic book podcast, and I should be waxing prosaic about Michael DeForge and all those people. But sometimes
that I understand.
Sometimes it works for me, and sometimes it doesn't. Most of the time, it doesn't. So I guess we'll have Kevin as our entree into that world.
It was a free
festival, so it was jam. They had food trucks outside and free bands playing, and it was just. I'm not sure. I appreciate that it was free, but I don't know if maybe having a small cover charge would have at least discouraged some of the looky-loos. Because the problem is, as I discovered, do you guys know the difference between a zine and a comic book? It's about $15. That's the difference. So, I don't know how many, you know what I mean? Like, you're just wandering in. And if you dig it, you know, charge what you can. But a lot of this stuff, I mean, these books I bought were regular prices, but most of the stuff is at least, you know, $15, $20, $25. And you kind of look at it, and you can tell it's well-crafted and everything, but, man, it makes it a higher risk. You know, I don't mind dropping $5 on something. If you like it, great. If you don't, you don't. But that $15 to $20 for a pamphlet-sized thing always makes you think, you know, do I really want to risk this? But I don't mean to besmirch the world of zines and art comics, so Kevin, come to their defense.
Oh, if you're going to look for me as a representative of art comics, look elsewhere. Please look elsewhere. like I would say I'm an indie comics fan and everything, but art comics not really my scene.
Fart comics?
Like, yeah, you know what the X? No, like it basically comes down to like, oh, like are you a fan of Top Shelf or are you a fan of Fantagraphics? I fall more into the Top Shelf crowd, so sometimes like I know there's people that rave like of Fantagraphics and, you know, but I'm like a lot of their stuff really doesn't, you know.
I have a Fantagraphics script book for tonight.
I mean, I enjoy some of the history. A lot of this stuff grows right out of the underground comics of Crumb, and everyone knows how much I like Gilbert Shelton. But yeah, some of the newer versions, I don't know. It doesn't seem sometimes like much new is being tread. It's a lot of, you know, just mixing pop culture stuff with sex and defecation and stuff like that.
And a lot of coffee. Coffee makes a lot of appearances.
Speaking of that Kramer's book, I'm like, yeah, I remember seeing 5 preview pages, and I'm like, it's the same thing over and over. Like, I don't want to get like art comics fans upset, but sometimes it seems like it's like a double standard. Oh, we hate the superhero stuff, and then I go read like the art comic stuff or some indie stuff, and I'm like, you're doing the same mistakes here. But anyway, yeah, that's and just so how that's I perceive it.
Like the Marvel comics, like I like it because it has those, you know, the different characters and has some interesting stuff. But at times when it devolves into the sex and, like, yeah, I said, defecation, all that, it just feels like all this ground was covered in the 60s already. But hey, you know, everyone's free to have their voice heard in the medium of their choice. So
people are still defecating in the 2010s.
Oh, definitely.
Steve, where do you land on some of these? I know you like the Crumb, and Shelton, where do you stand on the modern sort of underground scene?
It's more a matter of just volume and what nostalgia adds extra to the experience that the new stuff can't. So, you know, there's so much of the old underground stuff out there, and I am able to revisit it so infrequently, especially since having kids as far as what I'm leaving laying around the house, that I'd rather go back and revisit more R. Crumb stuff or Shelton, you know, rather than, you know, seek out too much new stuff, because the old stuff has the added element of the nostalgia piece to it too. So it's just that much more of a bang for my buck as far as time spent. You know, that said, I'm a sucker for art books, not necessarily art comics, but the art books might be comic cartoonists, but I'd rather see things in a nice big oversized hardcover with things splashed out all over the place and just seeing, you know, some of the best stuff and get into the actual line work without really caring too much about the sequential concept, if any exists.
Phil, do you dabble in that world?
When you say underground comics, do you mean like self-published?
Kind of. They tend to have very iconic styles. And like I said, in my mind, a lot of it seems to revolve around taking pop culture stuff and making them have sex or that sort of thing.
Okay,
and sometimes
works, so,
sometimes
then
it doesn't.
I don't think I've dabbled in a lot of that.
Now you get a good cross section of the comic industry and some of this stuff at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival. That's why you can go from one person, you can feel like totally at home, and then you go to the other corner, and you're like, okay, I don't think I'm gonna buy any of this stuff. Like it's weird to feel that displaced and at home in the same building.
But it was an interesting experience. It just really wasn't. By volume of comics, you know, you're looking at maybe 4 or 5 out of the 100 people there. So that also put the odds kind of bad because you're like, there just isn't, if it'd been all that sort of realm. But, you know, a lot of it's this weird, they like the older stuff, but I don't quite know if it's for some ironic reason. Like they have all these old skin mags from like the late 60s, early 70s, but I don't know if they're meant to be ironic. Erotic, or if it's ironic, or like I don't get why you just want some random, you know, overpriced weird skin mag from 30 years ago. You know what I mean? I don't know if I don't understand the aesthetic. I understand if you're like, oh, it's sexy, but I don't know that it didn't seem like this was these sort of things were being traded for erotic reasons. But I don't understand the genre or the crew. So I was kind of at a bit of a loss.
You spent too much time at Disney. Kevin, what do you got?
Oh, I got a real crazy.
Of course you do.
I got all indie. I got all indie on you guys. I got Hive number 3. It says it's a somewhat quarterly comic journal, but good thing it says somewhat there because I think this one's from like 2009 and they've only gotten to like Hive number 5 and this is like what, 2014 now? So I noticed on the website they had crossed out the somewhat quarterly part. It's kind of a unique package. It's like sort of like unfolds like an accordion. Like you can read it from both sides. It's like half of the book is like one way and then you flip it over and reverse it. Like it's not exactly like, you know, you think of Japanese stuff where it reads backwards or forwards or you flip it upside down to get the front cover, but then the spine's on the wrong side. Well, with this, the spine is always on the wrong side. And it's like two stapled spines. It's really strange. And it has like a cardstock cover. And like you, since it says Hive, you only see like the HI on the inside. And then on the outside, you see the VE3. So I'm just, you're not quite sure how to like hold it or anything. But once you get to the inside, it's just like, I don't know. I guess you would say like, you know the paper you would put into the printer, like not really that much thicker than that. Which I guess it kind of gets towards that more like a zine format type of thing at some point. So it's an anthology. So like all anthologies, you know, your mileage may vary on some of the stories. I don't think a lot of the people in here like are that familiar or anyone you guys would know, but there is a story in here by Matt Kint, and there is a story in here that's by Joshua W. Cotter, who did Skyscrapers of the Midwest from Ad House Books, and he just does some, I don't even know how to describe it, just some crazy, crazy worlds. That's what it just seems like. It seems like his story is more like his art book that he put out. Well, it was sort of an art book. It's sort of like in between that was called Driven by Lemons. Like he usually puts out some really crazy emotional stories. Like I remember the one he did where like this kid gets a backpack that he really wants. And then he's like walking around with it, doing all this stuff with it. And then he gives it back to his mother. And he's like, I can't have this. The kids are going to make fun of me at school and all that stuff. And I'm just like, heartbreaking stuff. That's what I remember him for anyways. But there's a lot of stories in here. Like, I would say it's pretty good overall. Like, there's on one side, there's just, it starts off with just some weird, like, playing with patterns and stuff, and then it looks like some Egyptian gods, and yeah, of course, they're having sex and everything. So I'm just like, where'd that come from? But it's only like a couple pages, and then it'll go into like some slice of life stuff, or then there's a bit like with monsters where it's telling you, like, when you're doing a monster comic, this is what you should do. Like, you should have your monsters with a lot of teeth. And a lot of bulging eyeballs, and then it goes into page after page of just all these different drawings of monsters, which is pretty cool because, you know, I'm a fan of Atlas era comics and all that type of stuff. And then you get to, like, your stories where characters are just wandering around. I don't know where it's from now, but I remember reading, like, a sampler collection from another publisher that was just, I guess, a few pages from all these different publishers and all these different stories. And I remember there was just a robot walking around and then sand was accumulating in its gears. And then eventually it just, like, stopped walking. They have one in here that's sort of like a robot wandering around just through the cold. And then he runs into a bird and complications ensue. And they have bios in the back of each section for, like, each artist. And, of course, the Matt Kint one I found was... Well, I should really say it's by Carl and Matt Kint. And I'm like, I'm not exactly sure on the relationship. But I found it interesting that there is both of them doing this. And, you know, another Kint story that people are not aware of. It's in, like, black and white. And it looks like it's done on some... Like, a different type of, like, old type of paper. But it's sort of, like, watercolor-y. Like, sort of his usual style. And then I believe I sent you guys the artwork for the sci-fi story where the guy's sort of, like, materializing.
Yeah, I like that page a lot.
Yeah, was that from Andrew Drillon?
Yeah, yeah.
I love the stalactites and stalagmites in the cave. They look like poop.
You'll need to post that on the Facebook page.
Oh, yeah. I'll post most of that stuff. Because there's quite a few stories in here, and they all have pretty distinctive art styles. But I think that was like one of my favorites in here. It's just a sci-fi story where they're like exploring the caves and making them ready so that they could be lived in later on. And then... He runs across himself, and he's like, wait a second, how come myself is here? He starts having a conversation, and yeah, there's complications. And then there's like another slice of life story and kind of morbid-y type of thing. And then there's sort of like, reminds me of a Dean Haspiel type of thing. What was it? The one he did for Activate when he was involved with that website. Where it's just like weird, godly kind of stuff where just crazy stuff is going on. It's only a few pager. And then it gets into like the really, like what I think of is of underground comics, the summer of 7-Eleven, which is, you know, lots of words, kind of cartoony, you know, everyone's exaggerated. And everyone looks kind of ugly. Like, the type of artwork I avoided early on when I started reading comics, I'm like, oh, that's ugly stuff. Like, I don't want to be reading that. But at some point, I just sort of took to it. I think it was, like, with Peter Begg. I was just like, oh, yeah, I got to check this out. Like, there's not a lot of art styles where I would try to mimic. But, like, that's one of them. Something about it. I'm like, I just got to get into that. I got to see how that works. I got to trace this stuff, and I got to get in there, see all the curves, how that works. Like, sometimes I'm just fascinated by that type of art style. And then there's usually a lot of detail, and I'm just like, well, what's going on there? Maybe it's, like, the exaggeration. I just like to just play around and that type of stuff. So that was interesting, even though the characters are, like, talking about cigarettes. And they're trying to figure out what kind of cigarettes their customers would be into. And I'm like, I can't really relate to the subject matter, but kind of an interesting story. So this is, I believe it's Grimalkin Press. So you can go to their website and actually purchase some of the newer Hive volumes. And they have different creators in each volume.
Sounds like a lot. Is in that accordion.
Yeah, like, it's... I think it's... Yeah, one of them's, like, 67 pages, and the other one's, like, 70 pages.
Wow.
Like, kind of a fast read, but interesting, nonetheless.
Phil, how you been?
Pretty good.
Reading any comics?
Yes. When I was in Fan Expo, I picked up one called Epic Kill. Published by Image, and everything is done by one guy, Raphael Inco. And the thing that brought my attention to this is the way he did this comic. Instead of writing dialogue and like a script, he just started drawing and did it that way. And basically, he just wanted to make a comic that was felt like the character was just on the run the whole time, like in an action movie. And it starts off really, really quick. where this girl starts to come to her senses a bit in this facility, and like she'll see a shark floating by, but it turns out just to be a guy. So I think she's kind of snapping out of something. I've only read one issue so far. And all of a sudden, these guys just start trying to kill her, and she ends up being this really, really good fighter, kind of like the Bourne Identity there. And it's just nonstop action. Normally not the type of comic I'd like, but I don't know, I found it very intense, and he did a really good job on the dialogue, considering he did it after he drew it. And I found the story very interesting. I think Kevin read a bit of it.
Yeah, I'd say it's interesting. Like, yeah. It definitely reminds me of, like, the Bourne Identity and those type of...
Maybe mixed with a bit of Kill Bill or something.
Yeah.
Like, some over-top type kills. And it's cool what she hallucinates. Like, she might hallucinate samurai wolves coming after her. But really, it could just be the police. And it turns out that the president is the one trying to kill her. And it's kind of cool because it's Obama, which most people probably wouldn't do that in a comic.
I think there was a lot of that going around at that time period. Like, I think at Image Comics, like, there was one week where they, like, killed the president two or three times.
Usually they suck up kind of thing. But
yeah, I think there is something like that going around. But yeah, it was definitely something I should check out. Because I think that got more than the original five-issue.
Yeah, it was supposed to go five, and then it ended up going 10.
Yeah,
and,
so I should check back into that.
All the art is great. Like, I have no complaints anywhere. I'm not as picky as Andrew, mind you.
No, I think it was good. It was exciting.
Yeah, it was very well done. Like, for one guy, I was just really impressed. Like, the colors, everything.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, stiff or anything. Like, it moved.
He's the only one on the credit page. There's nothing else. But yeah, I'd highly recommend this. I imagine it's out in trade by now.
Yeah.
Because this was a couple years ago. Or, 2012.
Cool.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I was going to say, that Obama, he did pretty well in that Spider-Man comic.
Yep.
He also did well in Savage Dragon, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in there. Yep. He was in Youngblood.
And Brock the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Blue Water.
Oh, yeah. He teamed up with a bunch of different people, too. Fought zombies. He's done everything.
I've got another Image comic here. I had three issues out so far. And it is Black Science from Rick Remender and Mateo Sclerera.
Ooh.
And Dean White. Mr. Cotter. Ooh. I hear the ooh-oohs going.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but it looks so cool.
It is so awesome.
There's three issues out so far, and I got similar to like I was saying about, art comics and underground comics and getting into new material along those lines. I'm a jaded old reader. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. With new books, it's hard for me to get my eye caught and to get invested enough to keep going with a new concept and new characters, given the fact that there are so many characters and concepts that I'm so familiar with for decades and decades, and it's fun to step into that world, and there's only so much reading time, right? But I still manage to keep myself open enough and check things out enough to find things here and there, so I'm not going to pull up lame on you guys or anything. But Black Science really did an excellent job of taking me right into the action, splitting up the characters so you're only being introduced to a couple at a time before they reveal that there's an ensemble cast, so you can become invested in the characters and get to know them a little bit in isolation. And it's just a good storytelling way that really roped me in a fractured sense. I mean, this comic opens of a scene with two people basically on the run in another dimension on some alien planet, and they're just on the run trying to get back to their ship or whatever to bring some sort of fuel, which just happens to be some water for some coolant or something. And they're on the run and they're being chased by armed, like, humanoid toad men. And the two quickly become one. So that's something you can kind of wrap your head around pretty quick and get behind. It's a fast-paced action. You're right in an immediate threat. There's only two up now, just one person. So you've got that weight. Anyone can die. Big things can happen. Andrew, I know you don't like it when that trope is used to throw you into the action and then go back and flashback and kind of tell you how it got there. But here, if they had started at the beginning, I don't think I would have cared. And here, because I got some action and I saw these people struggling to survive and in some cases not, I mean, all hell is breaking loose. So it's interesting to go back and then get these tastes of how they got to this point. And I think Remender made a great choice doing it that way, because I don't think I would have been hooked otherwise. Does that make sense?
Makes complete sense. I picked up the first issue. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh, it's unreal. The turtles with the land on them, and then the structures, and there's lightning coming down from the sky. And I'm like, what is going on with this world?
And Dean White's coloring, everything's purple and blues, and it seems really interdimensional. At the same time, by going with a lot of reds at times, he keeps that sense of urgency going, you know, that in the immediacy of the events, and it keeps the current interdimensional stuff separate from, you know, the past flashbacks. But what it is basically, it's like, it feels Fear Agent-y to me, because it's, it's Remender. Yeah. But it's sort of, and I never read or saw Jumanji, but I imagine that it's like Fear Agent meets Jumanji of some kind, where they're basically opening up a portal to different dimensions, and all hell is breaking. None of them seem to be very, comfortable of an environment to be in. So you get to see the environment from these people's eyes, and it's supposed to be alien and unknown. So that goes right with the fact that you're a reader picking up this new comic. It's okay that it's unknown. It's all unknown to the characters, too. I just think it works really nicely. It's also an ensemble piece, like I said, instead of a cast, instead of a solo tale. So in that way, it's very different from Fear Agent. But I found it to be really interesting. There's a mystery because there was some sabotage of the device that brings them to the different dimensions. And they're basically just exploring. And with the sabotage, when you go back, you realize that the guy's got his kids there. So there's this sense that this guy's got to make it to keep his kids alive and all this business. And you realize that they... It's like, why would he have brought his kids into this situation? But when you go back to the flashbacks, you realize they weren't supposed to be there at all, kind of a thing. And you realize, oh, man, not only are they all doing this stuff, but they were, totally unprepared and unequipped. And they're just bouncing around to these awesomely designed, worlds. They flash into this enormous cliffhanger of being in this, war battle zone between really well-armored, well-tech-equipped Indians, and the armor is awesome and really colorful and everything, too, and they're fighting the white man, who are Germans, and mopping the floor with them, too, and oh, man, it's crazy stuff, isn't it, Kevin?
It is. Doesn't it remind you of, Fantastic Four or Challengers of the Unknown or something like that?
Yeah, Reed's getting shot, and Sue's getting shot in the head, and, it's crazy stuff, man.
It's like if they didn't have morals, or I don't want to say they're evil, but yeah, it's sort of they've went off the deep end a little bit.
And because you've seen these people, like I said, in these urgent manner, and seen them, been in the trenches with them, and almost have a little war story to tell, about what they've just done. Then when you go back to the flashback stuff, some of that boring setup stuff all of a sudden matters. Because, oh, yeah, that's all. Is that the chick who, oh, yeah, okay. Or is that the guy who did, oh, all right, now. That kind of makes sense why he's that way or whatever. It's really well done, and I'm really looking forward to the continuing journey.
Yeah, you'd think they're going to switch up the art style a bit, or the coloring or something with every arc. Doesn't it seem like it sort of gives me that impression from the jump from the first issue to the 2 and 3.
Yeah, well, 2 and 3 are in one dimensional world, and issue 1 is kind of the opening, James Bond big stunt opening movie sequence, if you will, to rope you into it, the pre-credit stunt. But yeah, who knows? Who knows how long they'll even stay in each of the worlds? They can hang out in this Indian versus the Germans one for a while, and it would be fine with me. It's wild. It's such a crazy, intense, chaotic battlefield that they're actually able to slip through the cracks a little bit in an advantageous way. It's wild.
It's kind of weird that Fear Agent didn't grab me as much as this did, because these seem tailor-made for me. I remember commenting on Marvel Noise, I had a story where, someone's trying to create the next Big Bang or something, and then all these comics are coming out, and I'm like, ooh, like this plays like right into my whole like love of sci-fi and big concepts and all that. And even the next series that Remender is doing where everyone's underwater and they're like sending probes into outer space to find another world and everything like that, because the land is like a wasteland and it's all radioactive or whatever. Like that, I'm just
you
like,
idiots,
oh man,
you
I
messed
could, like,
it up.
That stuff. So good.
All right, pick up Black Science, and if you have it on your stack to read, get to it, because there's two other issues, and you're going to want to jump. You're going to want to read all three together.
Yeah, I might at this point move to trade. Although it sounds like they're worth it on their own.
Well, I know there was some hemming and hawing with the first issue about it being wordy, but I'm just like, oh, this comic didn't take me 2 minutes. I'm happy. Like, you know how I am about sometimes about that stuff. But I think it was, you know.
I read the first two issues together and was really satisfied, like I had read a trade's worth of material and got left with a really good cliffhanger. And then it was like a week later, I got the third issue came out, and I picked that up and read it. So I do think it works in a serialized way. It's definitely intense, though. And I think that the idea is simple enough, the cast is small enough, that it's not going to be one of these things where you're going to be lost if you come back the next month and it's like, now, what am I reading about here?
Yeah, there's not like a huge, like there is like some level of mystery, but it's not like you have to have all these, remember all these moving parts and like there's subplots for all these different things. Like the basic concept is simple enough. Oh, they're Dimensionauts, as they say in like the third issue. So yeah. You can sort of move on to, like, other things later on, but still have some sort of continuing threads, but have some done-in-one stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, when someone's bleeding out, the story is about trying to save that person. So, you know, you can get, you know, that's pretty universal of a thing to be able to identify with.
Yeah.
The little things that string along in the background, you know, you can grab onto them or not. But, you know, you can understand, I got to get fuel back to the ship. You can understand the head scientist guy on a broken scientific piece of tech here is bleeding out. We got to save him. And we're on a battlefield full of Indians wearing armor. Okay. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, well, so far it seems to be like the perfect monthly type of book.
Andrew, what you got?
All right. My next book is, I took a flyer on at a recent sale. By recent, I mean probably Christmas or maybe even Free Comic Book Day, in the half-off bin, the Bucko hardcover from Dark Horse. And this is Jeff Parker and Erica Moen is her last name. And are you either of you kids familiar with this book?
Not at all.
I am, probably through podcasts. I think he was either on War Rocket Ajax or Word Balloon talking about this.
This was a webcomic that's collected, so the format is a little bit, it's a slightly wider than it is tall, I would say, although it's pretty close to square. I mean, this is just me eyeballing it, not me using anything complicated like a ruler. But I think it mimics the way it is. But what I really like about it is at the bottom of almost every page, they have a commentary track where Parker and the artist both leave a line. And they'd say, you know, it's in different color text about comments about the strip or the panels they wrote or anything like that. So it's kind of neat to get that extra content. And at the back, there's some, you know, process material as well, where it's a lot of the, like, photo reference type stuff. I mean, the art isn't photo reference, but she would have someone pose in a certain way, yeah. You know, and then you can see how she renders it. It's not like she puts it up on a light box or anything. Her art style is quite a bit, it's fun and cartoony and everything. So I like it. And those of you that have listened to Kevin and I long time back on Marvel Noise know that I like Jeff Parker, who, and I'm sure several other of you too. He's now made it in the big time. I don't know what if he has any current ongoing indie projects.
He has that distinguished competition.
Right. Well, I meant indie, though, like not big two type stuff. Because he's still got Marvel work. Or has he left the House of Ideas?
It seems like he's left the House of Ideas.
Well, I'm sure he'll be back someday. But anyways, this has his sort of characteristic silliness. And the story is based in up in good old Portland. That's the Portland that's on the West Coast, not the Portland in Maine.
The Portlandia of Portland?
Yes. I've told this story, but as a kid, I always thought that the Salem witch trials were in Salem, Oregon for some strange reason.
Oh, that's like because Washington in Washington.
That was the only one. You know, I'm like, Salem, Massachusetts, where's that? Salem's the capital of Oregon. But anyway, so it's this this young man, and he's... how am I going to describe this? It's
sort of just the bizarre.
The bizarre. He basically ends up late to a job interview and discovers a dead body in the restroom of the place he had the job interview. And that leads to him having all these strange adventures that follow from there. But it's not terribly plot driven. It's more giving the character of these sort of strange bicycle riding Portland type people. There's a suicide girl that appears and a juggalo lady that appears. So I wouldn't necessarily think this is obviously not a scene that I'm intimately familiar with, being a tired old man, but there's something to Parker's sensibility and also the art style that really captured me. And I think she has a good way of telling the story. Although from their notes, I guess he helps with some of the layout. I'm not entirely sure. They're not so much into the process of it. It's more them being funny in the commentary. I mean, in the back, there's a bit more of the how it's made, but it's not really a breakdown of the different here's the script type of thing. But I really liked it. But again, it was, you know, half off, so I don't know. Like anything, I think most of us get discounts. I don't know at $20. I mean, it's a nice package and all that might be a little steep, but let's be honest, most of the time, unless we're buying it from the creator, we're usually getting this stuff at least at, you know, 20% off or something, right, guys? You pay a lot of full boat on stuff nowadays?
Well, for more expensive stuff, there's no way I'm buying it at full price. Like, you know, it has to be within a certain range that, you know. Like the Stray Bullets, you know, we said, oh, it's only going to be printed one time, but it's $60. And I'm just like,
That's worth it for that many issues?
I know, but I'm like,
That's great, because Marvel would cost, it costs like 100 and something.
I don't know if I've ever bought something at full price for $60, honestly.
I'll gladly pay that for something like that.
That's outside of my, maybe if I had a shop where it was... If it was,
or if it was like Japanese and bland story.
Well, why would you buy something that had a bland story, Phil? That seems rather strange.
I mean, I have bought the artist edition. Some of them I've gotten deals on, but some of them I've bought pretty much close to full boat.
Yeah.
But generally, or if I'm in a convention, I'll buy something from a guy.
Right.
You know, like
direct. Like on Kickstarter, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but normally,
I'll admit I bought an artist edition at full price, but you can't really find those at 40% off discount usually, anyway. So,
which one was it?
It's not suitable for this podcast.
What? Published by IDW. Which one was it?
Daredevil Born Again.
Ah, okay. I still have never read that. All right.
Jeez,
Phil.
Yes.
How can you follow up Bucko?
Well, I could follow it with some... You might censor this whole review out. So I was at the store looking for books, and I pick up this one book and open it up, and there's a guy in a throne, and he presses a button and goes, "Get me my cat jaculate." And out comes this really skinny, dried-up, diseased-looking cat with a tube stuck to his thingamajiggy. And he starts ejaculating into this tube, screaming, and it hooks up to this guy's arm, and then he just starts peeing everywhere. So I thought in my head, I should not pick up this book, because what would that say about me? So I picked up all five.
Where were you? What kind of a store were you in?
Well, this is a Fantagraphics book called Prison Pit by Johnny Ryan.
Oh, okay. You guys know it? Sense now.
I have all those volumes too.
I loved it. I shouldn't, but I did. All I've read is so far is the first book, and it's not a lot of dialogue, very simple. You can just breeze through it. It didn't really set up much story. Basically, the main character gets thrown on this planet, which I'm guessing is a prison planet, and just goes into battle after battle. But it's just crazy, some of these battles. Like, he encounters this one really skinny guy, this naked, like, alien-looking guy. And the alien guy just looks at him, and he just starts jerking off. And all of a sudden, he has, like, this big clay face exosuit all over him and just wacky things like that. And then the weirdest part is the way the comic ends. The main character gets his arm cut off, and there's these creatures on the planet, these like slug creatures.
There sure are.
Yep, that they eat up this liquid that sweats out of these trees, and they end up shitting out like these drugs that these people on this prison planet take, and it makes them, I guess, stronger from what I could tell. And kind of like Bane, I think, like something like that. And so, yeah, this guy's arm's cut off. So one of them ends up joining into his arm. And at the end of the comic, they're just sitting there and it starts giving him a blowjob. And you're just like, what a way to end a comic. But for some reason, I want to read more. You bought them all, too. So there's something wrong with you, too, Steve.
Yeah, they're awesome. There's no question.
I love them.
Yeah. Wait till you look to the backs and see the quality of creator and the endearing comments that they make about what is it? Is it Johnny? Who's the artist?
Johnny
again?
Ryan.
Ryan, right?
He's the writer and artist. He did the back strip on Henry and Glenn Forever and Ever on number four. Okay. He did the back strip. He did Mark and Gary, the same principal, but with Gary Newman and Mark Mothersbaugh.
Mm-hmm. Now, Phil, don't try to wrap your head around any kind of story here. Whatever in its immediacy is needed for the scene or for the battle or whatever is going to happen. This guy does continue along this guy's story a bit. Mm-hmm. But there's no, I mean, it's just crazy battle after crazy battle. And there's some linear aspect of it where things kind of seem like they're going to end and you feel like you're getting a taste of something more and that there's some sort of high concept at work, but it's only for a second.
Yeah.
And then you're back to the crazy just panel after panel. Like, and I can imagine this almost animated, like, almost like, again, talking about underground comics, almost mm-hmm. like an acid trip animation of just constant forward movement, right? There's no going, it's just constant, and then this thing's popping out of this, and then that's attaching to that, and then this is being sliced off this, and then it's the next guy, and then it's just, it's, there's much momentum there, and it's a very, I throw around often that comics are a fun ride. This mm-hmm. one is a total ride, because you're just, it's going for a drive, and you're going for a ride.
Yeah, I found it was a good palate cleanser from the more complicated stories. Like, it was nice just to shut my brain off for a bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there more than 5 books? Is there going to be?
I don't know. The fifth one just came out within the last 6 months, so.
Yeah. Okay. You haven't read that one yet, I guess?
No, I haven't. Oh. I've read the first 4.
If you like his sensibility, he also did humor strips for Vice magazine. You can find them online. Okay. Like the cartoons he did, Johnny Ryan. So he has a kind of funny sensibility. He's on Twitter too.
Yeah, it's not often I buy Fantagraphic books, but yeah, this one I ended up catching my eye.
This seems like a very borderline book if I would enjoy it or not. Because some of the things you're describing
is
almost like Michael DeForge in a way, like just crazy stuff.
Yeah, I think you really like it. It just might be a little too perverted for you, though.
What? He's Canadian.
There's a lot of body fluids being mutated.
Yep. It's definitely out there, but I say pick it up.
Give us a comic you would enjoy, Kevin.
I would enjoy. Well, see, I was catching up with Afterlife with Archie. I bought the third issue in print, but I didn't have the second issue, so I kept on putting off the third because I'm like, well, I have to buy the second issue digitally, and I just recently got to it after, I guess I kept on, you know, other things are more important and pressing, so I'm like, I'll put this off. And I read the second issue, I'm like, holy Jesus, that series good.
There's only three so far, I think, right?
It's so ridiculously good. I really enjoyed the first issue, and we talked about it, and I read the second one, and I'm like, how can I enjoy this series more than the first issue? I'm like, this is just ridiculous. I just can't believe how much I'm enjoying it. I'm not even, like, I never really read Archie regularly. It's like that criminal story. I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, this is going on. Oh, just so nuts. So.
Agreed. It's high quality.
Yeah. But just the things that end up happening and where they end up going, and in sort of the back of your mind, you're like, how is this going to go on forever? But I'm trying not to think about it and, you know, just go along with it. I'm just like, this is just really fun.
I'm guessing his art pages would be pretty expensive, eh?
Oh, maybe. Because who was I checking recently? Maybe I was checking into some Fatale pages, and I'm like, these got to be really expensive. And it was only like $200 or $300, and I'm like, that's reasonable. So I'm wondering if the Afterlife with Archie stuff would be really expensive.
Yeah, because I wouldn't mind, like, from some of the art I've seen, I wouldn't mind a couple pages.
So nice. I'm sure that's what part of the appeal is, too. So, but anyhow, totally nailed it. Like, I got to get right onto issue 3, which has since I have a print copy, it has a nice sort of, like, rough-feeling paper cover. So I'm like, oh, yes, physical comics. Let me rub this all over my body.
I feel like more should have been out by now. I guess it's kind of delayed, the artwork.
Or? Yeah. Well, it came out October 31st, didn't it? So that's really a November book, so should be like a fourth issue very soon.
Yep. I got a book from Dark Horse that I had grabbed sight unseen, except for the blurb in previews a few months ago. And it is, so it's a current release. I'm not sure if it's a collection of stuff that was released overseas previously or not, but it's called Monsters and Other Stories.
I like monsters.
And you will like this, Kevin, at least the third story quite a bit. And it's from Gustavo Duarte, D-U-A-R-T-E. And it priced at $13 retail U.S. Sorry, guys, $14.50 in Canada.
Boo.
Oh.
There's a one-page introduction by Sergio Aragonés, who is saying how delightful sequential art of this nature is, and goes into a little bit of the history even of how sequential art on cards was even used by storytellers like on the streets in Rome and that kind of stuff to help, you know, embellish their storytelling and, you know, give a visual aid, if you will. The cool thing about these stories, there are three within this trade paperback, is they're completely wordless and sound effectless. Mm-hmm. And what the first story is, so you're, you know, really focused on the ability of this guy's skill to tell a story here with these pictures. The first story is Caw, and it is kind of this big, like, farm guy. Kind of, he's a big slob. He goes out to see why his pigs are causing a ruckus, and there's an alien there, and he gets abducted with them. And when he comes back and wakes up and looks in the mirror the next morning, he has one of those Ben Grimm moments, and he's got a pig head. He's been turned into a pig. And for some reason, there are, like, chickens coming out of his, like, toilet, and there's chickens coming out of through the window, and there's chickens on the floor, and he can't get the chickens out of there. And finally, he's, like, up on a chair, and then he runs out of the house, and there's a big old chicken, and it bites his head off. And they all the stories have, and then it doesn't end there, actually. He goes down into the big giant chicken's bowels and meets the Grim Reaper there. And it's very forward, kinetic storytelling. And without having the words, it really adds a whimsical quality, even when there's something graphic. It's almost an all ages kind, not all ages, but a younger, you know, my son's 9.5, say. And he read these, and he really liked them a lot. He said it was cool how funny they were, but they also had a couple of little bloody scenes, you know, it's, which is perfect for a kid, right? It's kind of pushing the limits a little bit. The second story is birds, which is kind of a corporate metaphor, a bunch of these bird guys who are in an office, and there's some literal backstabbing going on, and then the Grim Reaper Death comes a-calling, and they're kind of, like, trying to run from the Grim Reaper. I just love, like, the classic visage of the Grim, you know, a skull in a black hood and carrying the scythe. Whether it's Monty Python or in comics or in cartoons or whatever, it's just such a fun concept.
Or Bill and Ted.
Yeah, right.
Norm MacDonald does Death on Family Guy.
The third story is the longest and the best of the bunch. And this is the one you would really like, Kevin. And it's worth the price of the book alone. And it's called Monsters. And what we've got is a situation where there are these big kaiju monsters arising out of the drink. And you get the scenes of them coming up out of the water and kind of showing how they're badasses, you know. One's a big, like, octopus thing, and he tears apart this building that has a little spire on the top, and he takes the spire and he wraps it on one of his tentacles, and then it's like he's got a little, like, tentacle spear. And then there's, like, a big turtle-like creature who comes up and sees a crane with some cargo dangling there, and he just flicks it for fun just to see it, like, flip up, and, you know, it's weighing, you know, tons and everything. And another that's a big aquatic Godzilla-like dragon monster that comes up around a big ship in a really nicely framed sequence. But so we got these big kaiju monsters, and they're walking through towns and coming in. There's a visual from overhead of the destruction of the path of them coming from the water and moving inland. And there's an old man in a pub, and he's kind of like an ancient one type, but he seems a little more amateurish, but he knows stuff. And he kind of runs back to his pad and makes a shrinking serum. Or he makes some kind of serum. You don't know what's shrinking yet. And then he heads out to with syringes to inject the kaiju one by one. And he's an old guy, and he's got to get to them. And again, there's this flow of this wordless storytelling as he's making his way through the city and trying to get to each one and leave his mark on them. Really good stuff. I think you guys would really enjoy it.
Really nice artwork. I really enjoyed the pages.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy where the big mouth is opening and good stuff.
Yeah, very simple line, but very skilled in his ability to tell a story and lead you on a path that is really satisfying. There's at least one or two really bloody or gory moments in each one. There's a beheading in one. There's the guy getting bit in half. There's even one of the big turtle creature, kaiju, comes out and he grabs a boat. And he just grabs the boat and he just bites it in half. And he's just holding the boat and there's all like black liquid dripping from the boat. And you know, it's like oil and blood of all the people kind of in there. And it's like there's no way that would be that way if he really been into the boat. But he's trying to tell you something, you know, about what this turtle-like creature is with the big underbite. Really fun. And from Dark Horse. All right, Phil, you got one more?
Sure. All right, I got just a quick little hit here. All you haters don't like it already, though. Turok, the Dinosaur Hunter, number one by Dynamite. I've never read much Turok before. I don't know if you guys have, and that's why you're not too big into it, but
sway me.
It doesn't look like a Dynamite book, for one thing. The cover is what caught my attention, but
I was going to say it looks like a Valiant book.
even better, like more like a Vertigo kind of art. And yeah, the art is great. Basically, Turok is, I don't know how it was told in previous versions. I did read a bit of one where it was like a kid from our world, and then he was his ancestors were Turoks or something like that. But this one is, he's an actual in a tribe, and basically he's an outcast from all the other ones. Doesn't talk to anyone, and they kind of pick on him and try and beat him up, that kind of thing. But he always outsmarts them. And by the end of the issue, some dinosaurs finally show up and end up destroying a lot of the tribe, except for him. He ends up getting away, and all of a sudden knights show up and start capturing the dinosaurs, and that's how it ends.
You mean like medieval knights?
Yeah, like, the ones with the big red crosses. What era is that? I've seen them before, but I can't tell you right now. But
is this a Templar?
Yeah, I think it's the Templar.
So it's like Land of the Lost type of...
I imagine... See, I couldn't tell if dinosaurs were new to this... like when they attacked the Indians, or if they've seen them before. I couldn't tell if they've... or if this was their first time being introduced to them.
Because it's weird. Because in Valiant, they have like the Faraway now, and it's like there was dinosaurs there too. So I'm thinking like that was sort of their Turok type of place, but they couldn't use him, so...
And nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Mm-hmm. I was very happy with this comic, and I'm going to read. I'm definitely going to read more of it. I really enjoyed the art. What are the other ones coming out from Dynamite by them?
All the old Western publishing or Gold Key things like Solar, Man and the Atom, Dr. Spectre. Isn't he like a supernatural occultist dude?
Mm-hmm.
Magnus Robot Fighter, and who am I missing?
Okay, so I'll try Magnus Robot Fighter. I used to like him, that comic a lot. I especially like the two-part crossover with Predator, which I believe was Dark Horse, but I don't know. Well, it was definitely Dark Horse because it was Predator.
Right.
I forget.
Okay.
But,
They all have all good creators. It seems like...
Yeah, this is Greg Pak and Mirko Kolak, who I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but it looked interesting when I flipped through it on the stands. I just had a lot of stuff, so I was like, do I really want to pick this up this week? I'm like, what if this doesn't fly, you know what I mean? But I wasn't worried about the writer talent.
For someone who's never read Turok before, too, it's better than any Marvel jumping on point. Like, you definitely don't need to know anything.
I don't know if they're going to – how – like, I guess they're going to – I've seen some advertising where they say, a new universe or whatever. Well, not new universe. You know, they might try to build something around their books, but from the previews and stuff I've seen, like, I don't think that's going to happen initially anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of curious. Because I guess you've achieved some method of success when another company copies you, and it seems like – Dynamite's doing a little bit of Valiant Comics copying. Like,
well,
you might as well copy, something that looks good and is going well.
Yeah. Well, besides Dynamite, it also says Gold Key. Like, and for me, this looks like a Gold Key book because it doesn't look Dynamite-y at all. It's very good quality.
Yeah, I think Dynamite's not really doing the Valiant thing. I think they just look for licenses. Mm-hmm. Like, that's been their motto from Jump practically.
Yep. But
I know they have a few of their own book, but they're pretty much licensed books.
But do you think they would have went after those licenses if Valiant wouldn't have reignited some of the interest, if you will, you know? Like, do they think that the Valiant fans that are picking up those books right now are gonna go to Dynamite, or are they like hoping to get like different people involved? I just kinda wonder.
Well, the old Dell and Gold Key collections of those, I don't know who the publisher was, but a bunch of hardcovers just came out in the last few years of all the collected Dr. Spectre stuff and, the old material from, again, it was Dell, Gold Key, and Whitman. Those were all, it was all the same company.
I think Dark Horse put out some collections of,
that must be.
At least Solar, I remember.
Yeah, all right, so then it would be Dark, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Good place to wrap things up, and we will gather again sometime soon to do it all again.
Sweet.
You can follow us on Twitter. You can find us on our Facebook page. You could leave us an iTunes review. You could listen to us on Marvel Noise. You could even go to the 11 o'clock comics boards and go to the Comic Book Noise subboard and find our episode thread there. If you like what we're doing, or have a suggestion, or want to add some comments of your own. All right. See you, knucklehead, soon.
Thanks,
later.
Guys.
Later. One room but one. Don't wanna
never one good one.